This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Nick Wakeman. Nick is the editor-in-chief of Washington Technology, washingtontechnology.com. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Glad to be here.
Always good to have you. Yeah. Sorry you're not in the studio, but this is going to be fun anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Next week, or this week, today, the top 100 come out, and we're going to get to that real soon. But I want to lay the groundwork here by talking about the overall environment in which we find ourselves. And about 10 years or so ago, I was hosting one of my occasional Meet the Press things, teaching people how to get in front of the media. And Alan Holmes, then editor at Federal Computer Week, was my main panelist or interviewee. And he said there were three things that got his attention as an editor: trends, major dollars, and controversy. And in today's environment, we have a really nice mix of all three. And we're going to, the first segment here, we're going to discuss LPTA, strategic sourcing, the CIA Cloud Award, the IRS events, and the IG report that deals, well, we'll get there in a second. But give me your overview of the current environment for doing business with the government.
Oh, it's just very quiet and boring right now, Mark. No, I mean, you kind of went down a list of, it's such a, to me, there's almost like, there's like a frantic pace. There's just so much going on. And then at the same time, you have, contract delays and things like that. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing was that the first one, the lowest price, the LPTA, I think still is hammering people and making companies, make some really hard choices on work to pursue. And it's very much, and we see this, I think, with some of the strategies that the top 100 companies have undertaken, which we'll get to later, but it's really making companies, it's taken away a lot of the incumbent advantage in the marketplace. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things. The CIA cloud contract, I think the cloud.
Yeah, talk about that for a minute.
The CIA awarded a contract to Amazon Web Services, $600 million over, it's either 4 to 10 years. It's a little unclear because the CIA isn't the most forthcoming agencies with what they're spending their money on. But Amazon won this contract, and then IBM was the other bidder, and they filed a protest. And last week, the GAO came out in favor of IBM's protest. They don't rule on the kind of the merits of the solution either company proposed, but more kind of on the process and the legalities of how the decision was made. And GAO said that the CIA was improper in how they looked at the pricing normalization, I think was the technical term. And then also there were some discussions post-award with Amazon that they felt gave Amazon more of an advantage. So they want them to redo the bid. But so just the kind of the controversy of, hey, this big protest, this big contract, that gets our attention. The dollar figure is huge. I mean, it's probably going to be the biggest cloud contract out there. So that's important. And then also the fact that it's the CIA and an intelligence agency. We're trying to get more details, which is hard to come by. But, one person I talked to said, just think about it. What the cloud can do for you. You have people scattered all over the place. The cloud, is the infrastructure you need to be able to push information out and pull information back. So I think it's going to be really critical for how they analyze intelligence, how they share intelligence, how they collaborate, all those things. So it's a very important contract for the CIA. And then the fact that Amazon, being the winner, and at least in the first round, I mean, it's continuing, of course.
Sure.
It's really significant because, I mean, it shows, Amazon, is one of the kind of the pioneers of cloud computing, but I don't think you really thought of them as being, I don't want to use the word commodity, but that's sort of, they're kind of the heavy iron kind of, cloud computing, maybe not as sophisticated, or that's the perception.
And yeah, but
this shatters that perception.
You have to take into account that they were not reticent in hiring big guns from our market, Teresa Carlson,
yes.
Max Peterson, and others.
Yeah, I mean, that shows they've been laying the groundwork for winning this kind of contract.
Yeah, Teresa and Max have been there for a while.
Yeah, I see. And they've probably been working on this procurement at least 2 years. But the fact that they, I think it was kind of a wake-up call to kind of the traditional players that, Amazon can have a, can win something like this.
A significant impact.
Yeah.
And, in a way it's surprising, but, when you look at the infrastructure that Amazon's put together, I think not.
Yeah.
Because if they hired Teresa and Max closer to the top, that neither of them is going to walk in without significant BD and contract folks.
Yeah, my thought would have been that they would have won something like this as a partner to a more traditional prime. So I think that really shows they're stepping out in front. And I think the hiring, Teresa and Max and the other folks they've gotten there, that's a great point. That they're, so whatever happens with this contract, I think it's a wake-up call saying, hey, we're here.
Yeah. And, another thing, this was a GAO protest. Another thing that came down the pike was the IG report from, late Wednesday or something, and maybe Tuesday last week, on undue influence at the Federal Acquisition Service being exerted.
What a story. I mean, I'm just now starting to really kind of dig into it, but, it just really goes to a lot of the dysfunction in procurement, that you would have, companies that have the gall to do what they're alleged to do. I mean,
right. It's still at the alleged stage.
Yeah.
And, you also have to take into account whether this is illegal or simply on the surface unethical or unusual behavior.
Yeah. And, because we don't know a lot yet on who, particularly on the government side, who necessarily were these political appointees, were these, who were these folks kind of making these kinds of decisions? So
right.
A lot still needs to be coming out, but the name, you have Oracle, you have
Deloitte and Carahsoft.
I mean,
yeah, three significant players on your list.
Yeah, and very well, well respected, companies. So I think part of it probably points to just how tough the market is, and just how. I don't want to call it the Wild Wild West because it's not that bad, but people are pushing whatever advantages they can see, and maybe this time they maybe have pushed too far.
Well, again, possibly, but again, a lot of the procurement regulations are contradictory. A lot of them are nebulous.
Right.
But if in fact one thing that I saw that a senior person at FAS went down and took a contracting officer off a contract at the request of the contractor.
Yeah.
That's some serious stuff.
Yeah, that is. I mean, that's the type of thing I think, kind of crosses the line. Not just, I guess, the pushback from the contracting office side of things, I think that, I feel bad for the people in those positions because I think they're so, overworked.
And beat up.
Yeah, and just beat up there, yeah. And we need more of them. We need good ones. We need them to be, feel like that they're empowered. And then, you hear about things like this, and it sort of undermines, whatever progress we're making in that area.
Yeah, and we definitely believe together that a lot of the people, especially the 1102s in government, need regular training.
Yeah, yeah.
So we not only need more of them, they need to come in prepared.
Yeah.
So we're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Nick Wakeman. Nick is the editor-in-chief of Washington Technology, and you can find him at washtech.com. You can also find him on LinkedIn. Are you using LinkedIn more lately, by the way?
I try. I kind of go in spells with social media because I try to do something every day, but I kind of fall short.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, you have a few other things on your plate, I know, this past week or so.
But I know LinkedIn is very important to our traffic and things like that, so more so than any of the others.
Well, there you go. All right, so the top 100 came out today, and Lord knows, how long has WashTech been doing top 100? Any idea?
Might have been our 20th year.
Yeah, I was thinking it could be.
Yeah.
So happy anniversary.
Yeah.
So and you know, I'm looking through the list, and the top 25 is relatively stable.
Yeah.
But we were talking between the break. You indicated that it's certainly stable on the surface. But those issues that we referenced earlier and others are always under the surface, and it's just the water's churning.
Yeah.
So let's take Lockheed 19 years in a row.
Yeah, 19 years in a row, ever since they merged with Lockheed and Martin Marietta. Merged.
Yep.
But they're very stable. They have a sizable lead over number two. I think $6 billion lead. But Lockheed has a new CEO, new leader in their information systems group. So they've restructured. They're making acquisitions. They're kind of a constant state of change there. And I think that's the story you go down through a lot of these. Northrop has a new executive leading their IT business. SAIC, of course, is splitting in half.
And becoming a pizza parlor.
What's that?
And they're becoming a pizza parlor.
That's right. The Leidos spinoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you, the whole naming thing is just sometimes...
Well, it begs the Monday issue when, who was it, Deloitte or PwC was going to change their name to Monday.
Yeah.
I love that story.
Yeah.
But, Leidos on the East Coast, man. Come on, get a grip.
I know. And I guess they're trying to make a play off Kaleidoscope, but I'm not quite sure what that means. But, frankly, Mark, if the name a year from now, especially they have some, big wins, new hires, what did Accenture mean to people 10 years ago, whenever it was they made that name?
Arthur Anderson,
Or some of these others. So, but it is kind of a head scratcher. I think the bigger thing, splitting the company, is just a really bold move. I mean, you see others like L3 at number 10. They spun out their technical services business into Angelity. You see other, Northrop sold off TAS. You see others kind of driven by some of the conflict of interest thing.
Right.
SAIC, it's not quite 50-50. It's kind of a 60-40 split. I mean, it's going to be two very sizable companies.
Yeah, but neither will be in the top 10.
No, neither will be in the top 10. That's true.
So
that's
true. Maybe not in top 20.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see.
And I think with SAIC, too, you have the, Bob Beister, the founder, is still, around, and it's sort of... he left. Gosh, it's probably been 8-10 years since he.
Well, since they stopped being employee-owned.
Right, right. And so a lot of changes have happened there since he left. I think there's still kind of some of the reaction. I think is nostalgia to what the company was like under him. But it's a different market. It's a pretty bold move on their part to kind of focus. Part of it will focus on like a high-end, high-margin, science, technology part, and then the other...
Not in this market.
Yeah.
High margin?
Yeah. Yeah, relatively high margin. And then the other would be, you know, the IT, enterprise IT and technical services part.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, all these companies, I mean, CSC has been selling off businesses, you know, chunks here and there. And their you know, Computer Sciences Corp, their push is more to kind of turn, they need to turn themselves around. And they need to, so their strategy is, we want to focus on, this is what we're going to be. We're going to be, you know, high-end, you know, services and consulting and solutions. And then they're selling off, you know, they had a credit services company they sold, which was a big chunk of business. They sold off some staffing business. They sold off what was left of the old DynCorp business that did aviation and range support. So so all these companies, you know, are reshaping themselves. It's just really very interesting part of the market to follow these big companies.
It is, and you know, the management churn is one thing. How much of the changes are predicated on you know, pricing issues, contracts being are they being protested more?
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely more protests. But you know, the stats are very misleading because the from the way the GAO looks at it, the percentage of protests that are sustained or get some sort of corrective action mm-hmm. is relatively steady. But what the numbers don't show are the amount of times that the protester and the winner come to some sort of agreement, or the agency pulls back on its own to make a corrective action, and then it gets dismissed, which is what's happened with the NetSense 2
right.
products contract. So it's really more, you know, it's really to the advantage of losing bidders to protest, because it's something like probably 70% of the time they're going to get some sort of positive result, either a piece of the contract or the contract gets rebid, that kind of thing. So it's amazing to me. It's just sort of built into how companies do business now.
That yeah.
Either we're going to protest or we have to weather a protest before we can start working on this. And so you have that layered on top of just the general delays because of, you know, the budget issues. It's definitely made the, you know, a tougher market to kind of predict when your revenue is going to start to flow.
You had a very quick snapshot, a great infographic. Run through that for us.
Okay. Yeah, we did a... kind of the top 100 by the numbers kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have several graphics, and we're going to be later this week. We'll have it up on the website as a slideshow. But just sort of looking at, you know, some of the big changes. Like about 10 companies, you know, have ranked the same. You know, 39 companies, their rankings actually went up. 37 went down. Those kinds of things. And
mm-hmm.
then you had. 14 companies that are new this year. I mean, some of them are...
Some return and some are
returning
brand new.
From previous years,
yeah.
But, you know, 14 that weren't on there last year. And that's one number that's pretty remarkable to me, because that number, it's pretty much that number every year.
Yeah.
You know, I think we, you know, maybe 10 one year, maybe 16, 17 another year, but that says something about the stability of these larger companies.
Well, it takes a lot to get there.
Yeah.
But, you know, the cool one for me is a company that I know, because I know a lot of people there, and that's Red River.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
really cool. And until just recently, they were not even in the region, you know, office-wise.
Right,
they had
right.
People
they, yeah,
here.
They I don't know if technically they moved their headquarters down here from...
I think they just opened a main, like, federal branch. I think HQ is still Boston, but,
yeah.
You know, my buddy Jim Connell's been down here forever.
Yeah, one thing I think about, you know, you look at Red River, and, you know, I put them in the VAR category, but being a VAR, I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, I would have said, if you'd asked me, I said, oh, you know, the VARs are going to disappear. And they haven't disappeared, whereas there's probably more VARs on the list now than there were.
CDW, you know. MX, Carisoft, DLT.
Yeah, but I think their Red strategies River. Have really changed a lot. I mean, they're not, you go to Red River's website, and it's not a catalog anymore.
No.
None of these guys are catalog people. They're really focused on particular niches, like Red River is really looking at data centers, mobility, and network infrastructure. That's kind of their play. And you see all the VARs that are growing and mm-hmm. vibrant companies, you know, doing that. They're partnering closer with a few, the OEMs to yep. kind of be experts in, Cisco or EMC or VMware, Citrix, take your pick, instead of trying to be everything to people.
Yeah, companies like Red River in particular, they have evolved into a very significant player on soup.
Right, so, yeah. And being an expert on a particular contract vehicle and really knowing how to use those vehicles. And I love Red River just because of their name, because I've always been a John Wayne fan. So. I don't know if it's still true that they make new employees watch that movie or they give them a DVD or something like that.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I'll ask. 51 are half are publicly traded, half aren't, or 49 of the 50.
Yeah.
Not
that
public.
The public companies, that number, and I need to go back because I was just working on this last night, and it kind of hit me that the number of public companies actually has been dropping. It used to be closer to 60, 65 out of the 100.
Yeah.
And I think what you see there is public companies that are dropping off because they've been acquired. That's probably the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also aren't seeing over the last 4 years or so very few companies that do an IPO and become publicly traded.
Right. Let's take a break here. I want to come back to this infographic. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Nick Wakeman. Nick is the editor of Washington Technology. I got the preview infographic. So I love getting stuff ahead of time.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the page, we have a breakdown of the $117 billion spent on total prime contracts in 2012. So start there.
Yeah, we broke it down by civilian contracts versus defense contracts, and it's $80 billion for defense and $37 billion for civilian. And it just, the war effort is still a huge revenue driver. I mean, it's coming down, and we'll probably see this change over the next couple of years. But I don't see it flipping, anytime in the future. But it really just shows how dominant defense spending. When you look at what we've been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now we're kind of pivoting towards the Asia Pacific region. I mean, that's sort of where so many of the dollars flow, and so many of these companies kind of made their big rise over the last, 5 years through defense spending.
So. Yeah. Okay, go to the bar graph underneath.
The bar graph?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the bar graph, too, because it really shows in real numbers how the market is starting to contract. I mean, this year the total is, $17.4 billion in prime contracts. Last year it was 26, rounding 27, billion.
Mm-hmm.
Year before that is $132 billion, and that was sort of 2010, 2011. 2010 was, 130, so those are our two kind of peak years, and then we go back on the bar chart to 2007. And,
yeah.
But this is the lowest total we've had since 2008, and it just sort of shows that crest of the market, and I think, next year the number will probably be a little bit lower. I think it shows, it's just it's a tougher, more competitive market, fewer dollars, more companies chasing them, and this to me is a great visual of what's going on there.
Right, and the eye-opener for a lot of people is the bottom stat.
Yeah.
top 20 versus the rest of the top 100. Taken.
Yeah, it's, because you think of, how many thousands of GSA schedule holders are there? So there's thousands, technically thousands of contractors, but the bulk of the business goes through the top 100, and then you look at the top 100 and $80.1 billion of the 117 go through the top 20 of the top 100. So
yep.
those are the you know, the Lockheeds, the Northrops, the CSCs, the HPs. I mean, those companies really dominate the market. It's
two-thirds to one-third,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It's literally an 80-20 split,
yeah.
Company-wise.
Yeah.
But and the same thing applies to schedules. We were talking about this between the break. Regardless of the schedule you look at, the top 2% of schedule vendors take 60%+ of the dollars.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the IT schedule, 2%. You know, translates into a fair number of companies because there's 5,600 companies on Schedule 70. But even so, you have, once again, lots of companies doing literally pocket change to zero. And,
you know,
and it is the way it is.
Yeah, you look at, you know, almost any of the large multi-war contracts and look at a rundown of who's doing business, you know, on them. If they have, you know, even just 15 or 20 winners, it's three or four that are really going to have 80% of the business. And, you know, I think about contracts like, you know, Seaport E. I mean, how many companies are on there?
Well, the count hasn't stopped yet
because
they keep
appending. They're still adding. And I don't know. I think it's just, I guess, the competitive, you know, the natural competition drives a lot of it. But, you know, I think that the government probably needs to kick people off more, but they, you know.
Well, possibly, but, you know, people who enter the market also have to come in more intelligently. This is not, I mean, everybody whines about a level playing field. There is no level playing field. You come in intelligent, educated, and ready to play the game, or you come in blind and stupid and leave screaming.
You know, that's a very, very good point, Mark. Coming in smart, looking at this, I mean, these are the companies you want to target to be your partners if you're going to get a foothold.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the last book, Selling to the Government, was to say to companies, and it's right in the beginning, you know, if you come in with high expectations and low talent, you're going to leave quickly.
Yeah.
Hello. You know, I don't care what your business status is. You damn well better bring a skill to the game.
Yeah.
Preferably, you know, the technical skill as well as contracting skills.
Yeah. You know, I know, Steve Charles over at MX, I've heard him talk about this and others about, you know, that quick return. You know, you come into the market and you think you're going to, you know, have a deal in the first, you know,
long
month.
Ball.
And, you know, some of the, you know, contracts take years. I mean, it's unfortunate, but it is you have to understand the nature of the market. Now, once you get the contract and you've been here 3-4 years, then, you know, things can speed up, but not off the bat at all.
No, and especially in conditions like we discussed in the first segment.
Yeah.
You've got low price technically acceptable. You have strategic sourcing. Strategic sourcing is going to be rolled out to 15 different schedules, 5 schedules each over the next 3 years. You know, the government thinks this is a good way to go. I question that, but, you know, right now it's fact of life.
Yeah.
It is a radically different environment, you know, and go back, you know, the first couple of years that WashTec did this, GSA schedules accounted for a couple of billion dollars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not much. Now it's up to about $36, $37 billion.
Yeah.
And when you put that in the large scheme of things, that's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it's really, you know, remarkable. I mean, the market, of course, is much bigger, but, you know, the dominance of some companies and that need just to be, you know, not expect a quick return,
right?
You know, to kind of be there and.
The infrastructure for a company is key, and that's one of the reasons that we see that stability in the top 100, particularly
right.
In the top 25.
Right.
The top 25 dominate year in, year out, because they have these infrastructures that, you know, are tracking procurements from literally the idea inception.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah, you need to have the guy that you know, talks to the government person at you know, in the hallway of the agency or at an event, and you hear that idea. You hear like, oh, they need this. This is a problem they need to solve. And it might be 2 years before there's a procurement.
Or longer.
But you can be going back and saying, hey, you know, have you heard about this? Or, hey, have you, you know.
Here's a white paper.
Here's a webinar. Those are the kinds of things that people need to do if they really want to gain a foothold in the market.
You have to be ahead of the curve. You have to do the Mr. Gretzky. Go where the puck's going to be, not where it's been.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what it takes to partner with the primes. You're listening again to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Nick Wakeman. We're talking about the top 100. The list just came out today. Find it at WashingtonTechnology.com. Nick, you have a report out on government IT contractor partnering. Part one is the subcontractor perspective. I say this to every company that says, well, I want a subcontractor to this company or that company, can you make an introduction like it's going to be easy? And I try to explain to them that all primes are known for spousal abuse. some just are, you know, not as abusive as others, but it's the nature of the game. We're a small business, they need us, you know. Not really. So talk about a little bit of the meat from your report, please.
Yeah, we have a report. It's not out yet, but should be out in the next, but definitely by the end of the month, where we...
Oh, good. I haven't truly advanced on it.
Very, very ahead of the game preview we've given you, Mark. But we looked at the top 100 as the largest primes and then sort of did a survey, a study of people looking at them giving them, you know, kind of commenting on how good of a prime contractor they were. And then from that, we'd be able to extrapolate kind of the nature of the environment, the state of the relationship. And really what, we kind of looked at issues such as, you know, teamwork, industry perception, process. Those were kind of the three big attributes that subs are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing we found interesting, when there was a kind of a disconnect between when commenters were talking about individual specific companies, they graded a lot of them pretty good. I mean, nobody horrible, nobody stellar, but all kind of grouped around on a scale of 1 to 5 around that 3.5, 3.6, 3.7 area.
Mm-hmm.
But when we asked people more generally how they felt about relationship with prime contractors, that's when the clause really came out. And people feel like it's getting more difficult to work with the primes in the current environment. But what they really want, though, is more honesty, more transparency, doing what you say you're going to do, more mentoring, you know, those kinds of things.
Most of those aren't going to happen.
Yeah. But, it does. I think one thing, though, if you're a big prime looking at this, you can sort of see, I think could be a guide for some room for improvement or how to, because everyone's looking how to differentiate yourself. So the teams you build are a big part of that. So, I think that there'll be some value there, but just some of these comments, that we got the verbatim comments that people were able to draw, write in, just really, really got to the point of, honoring staffing, non-payment. People complaining about, integrity of the team, how important that is. They ranked. Like I said, teamwork, industry perception, and the teaming process are the three biggies. But then you get down below that and people talking about ethics and, the commitment to the relationship, communications, those kinds of things are really, really important to the subcontractors.
Well, in defense of, if I can do this, primes, the expectations of some teaming partners are not particularly realistic.
Well, I think you make a great point, because our next phase that we're just, kind of kicking off is We're going to basically do the same kind of survey, but from the prime's point of view. And that one will be out, hopefully, we'll work on it this summer and, you know, probably the September time frame. Because I think, you know, it does take two to tango, and I think that expectation piece is sort of our next step to explore.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny because I have just over like 5,400 connections on LinkedIn, and these are almost exclusively in the government contracting arena. So I'll have people ping me and go, you know, the head of BD or contracting at systems integrator number 1, 2, or 3. Can you introduce me? Because I'd really they need my technology for this contract that they won last year.
I know. Like, forget it. That is such a, you know, I hear those stories too, and I'm just like, you know, I'll get an email from somebody saying, oh, I saw this RFP came out. You know, can you tell me who I should be teaming with? And I'm like, well, the RFP's out. The teams are done. You should have been, before the RFI came out, you should have been, you know, having this conversation.
Yeah, and if you're totally after the fact, you know, you darn well better have the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
Or the iPhone.
And the thing is that I think that a lot of the newbies to the market don't have that appreciation for how, you know, it's a complex process, and there's multiple entry points to the big primes.
I mean, well, you know, it's also exacerbated when you know, especially if you go to a small business administration seminar or webinar, and they say, you know, your best point of entry is a subcontract. So introduce yourself to the primes and get one. And that literally, that's the advice.
Wow. You go,
hello. Introduce yourself and get one.
Oh, it's only that simple.
Well, for that simple, 600,000 companies plus on CCR now, Sam, might have government business.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
So give me some wrap-up thoughts here. You know, this market is as interesting as we've ever seen it.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's the thing I find so fascinating. It's probably, you know, when you look on the opportunity technology side of things with mobility and the cloud and cyber and big data, you know, some of the things they're doing in healthcare, I mean, you know, it's really, really exciting. I mean, there's some great things that are, you know, the government is trying to do and companies are delivering. But then you look at the other side and look at the budget and the sequestration and the, you know, the political, you know, dysfunction. And it's just, you got like, is the worst of times the best of times? I mean, I hate to use that cliche, but it really is. And it's a very tough market. And I think, companies that you're kind of torn in two directions because you've got that short term, I've got to survive this next, you know, year, 18 months. But then long term, you've got to position yourself to, you know, take advantage of it when things turn around. So it's a great market to follow. I mean, for guys like us that, you know, like to talk about things and are driven by what you open up with, dollars, trends, and controversy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great time to be in the market.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Yeah, yeah. Where, thanks, Alan.
Wherever you are over there at BGov. Lord Nick, it's always a blast to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Mark.
This is not my day job. If you are interested in continuing education in the government market, I have a program that I partner with at Capital College, the Government Market Master Program. You can find out all of the information you need at capital_college.edu/GMM. You can find the information at the Government Market Master Group on LinkedIn. I suggest you join the group. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.